Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the tap. Wow. And here's Lucas Amitcha. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
We all know that Bellator MMA is televised here in the United States on Spike, but did you know this past Saturday's Bellator 180 was shown on CMT? Well, I didn't know that until I saw a press release from Spike on Monday about the ratings, and I am going to explain on this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence why this was a brilliant move by Viacom, along with discussing that topic and getting my take on other hot topic items in MMA. I will have interviews with Rob Font, Greg Ribello, Richard Odoms, Andres Quintana, and Matt Murray. Plus, I will preview Friday's Pro Fighters League event that will take place in Daytona Beach, Florida on NBCSN. Now, before I get into Bellator 180 being on CMT, I want to let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Get Fight free and see what's streaming for you. Download the Fight app today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, fight.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. And by the way, if you are a wrestling fan, we did debut a new wrestling show here on Radio Influence. It's called Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. On his debut podcast, he is joined by former WWE ring announcer Justin Roberts. A very fascinating conversation that he had with Justin. Of course, Justin's got a book out, so if you are into pro wrestling, definitely you want to check out Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Of course, this podcast, the MMA Report podcast, comes out every Wednesday. Had an episode of the post-fight podcast on Monday where myself and Daniel Galvan recapped Bellator NYC, Bellator 180, and UFC Fight Night 112. So if you want to hear my comments about those fight cards, head over there and listen to that podcast. It's up on radioinfluence.com, also available on iTunes, our Apple Podcasts, which is now called Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. The links are all available on radioinfluence.com, or if you're right there in your store, maybe on the phone, just search the MMA Report and you'll see the podcast. Really do appreciate everyone that does subscribe to this podcast. But you know, there are a couple of Bellator 180, Bellator NYC notes that I do want to talk about here on this week's episode of the podcast. And the first thing was about something that I learned on Monday, the fact of Bellator 180, which was the preliminary card or the main card. To me, I call it the prelims of the pay-per-view. And, you know, the television ratings did come out on Monday. Spike revealed that 901,000 people watched this two-hour fight card. The average audience peaked at 1.1 million. And the interesting thing that came out in that press release was the fact of this card, along with airing on Spike, also aired on CMT, which was something that was not publicized. And I think that was a brilliant move by Viacom not to publicize to the MMA fans that, hey, along with this fight card being on Spike, it's also being on CMT. Now, the reason I say that's a brilliant move is because they were trying to attract, this is my perception of it at least, they were trying to attract a different audience to the Bellator product. And, you know, they got 143,000 viewers, and that may be viewers that would not have checked out this card on Spike. You know, when you look at the numbers on Spike, which was 758,000, you know, it's a nice number. I have to believe that that is a number that is probably a little disappointing for Spike. I would have to think that they probably were hoping that the average on Spike would be a little higher. But at the end of the day, they had an average audience of 901,000 viewers. That's a great thing for Bellator. You know, there was over, I believe it was 200,000 Google searches for Bellator NYC. So they have to be happy with that. And we'll see what the pay-per-view buy rate ends up being. Of course, I predict 125,000, 150,000. But I just think it was an absolutely brilliant move to put Bellator on CMT, not really to publicize it, because they ultimately got the Bellator product in front of people who most likely do not watch MMA or very casually watch MMA. So I thought that was an absolute brilliant move by Viacom, and it'll be interesting to see if is this a trend going forward, or is this just something that they do for pay-per-view events, which, look, the number that you do hear is 2 to 3 pay-per-view seems to be the magic number that Bellator is going to do, you know, over a, you know, a calendar year. It doesn't sound like there's going to be another pay-per-view in 2016, but, you know, look, I said last week on this podcast, and I said it on the preview podcast, Bellator succeeding on pay-per-view is not just great for Bellator, it's great for the entire MMA industry, so everyone should be rooting for Bellator to succeed, because, you know, this sport needs someone to challenge the UFC. And I do believe Bellator is currently doing that when you look at the amount of money that they are throwing around to fighters. When you see, you know, Rory McDonald making $400,000 for a fight, they're definitely doing that. And it's ultimately only going to make the MMA industry better. So I commend Bellator and Viacom for making that decision, because ultimately they got their product out there in front of other viewers. It'd be interesting to maybe see if they use some different channels, maybe down the line. You know, I had some people on my social media on Twitter mentioning MTV and MTV2. You know, and you look at Viacom's, you know, portfolio, there are so many television networks they could put Bellator on to help grow the brand. So I thought it was a brilliant move. And I think it was very smart for Bellator and Spike and Viacom not to promote it was going to be on CMT. So, but I thought that was a brilliant move there. You know, in terms of ratings, the UFC ratings did come in. The main card averaged 819,000 viewers. Prelims, 319,000 viewers. The peak of the broadcast came in two different portions of that event, and it came during the opening matchup of the main card between BJ Penn and Dennis Seaver, and then in the main event between Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee. That peak of the broadcast was 905,000 viewers. I do have an article up on the MMAreport.com. It was a big day for FS1 in terms of ratings being number one in a dedicated sports network on Sunday in total viewers, and also in the adult 18 to 49 demographic. So a great day for FS1. But if you're Bellator, you got to put a little feather in your cap here. The fact of, you know, your 2 hour, you know, Bellator 180 card drew more in terms of average audience and a peak audience than the UFC card did on Sunday. So that's a little feather there in the cap for Bellator in terms of that. Of course, you know, this is one of those weeks where we have no Bellator, we have no UFC. But I will tell you, on Friday, there is a ton of MMA going on. You have early morning at 3 a.m. on Friday morning, Eastern time. You have Road FC. That'll be on Fight. And a couple of hours after that, about 4 or 5 hours after that, you have ONE Championship 56 on via ONE Championship's website. And then at nighttime, you have LFA 15 on Access TV. Also, you have the PFL card in Daytona Beach on NBCSN. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. And also on Friday, you have Combates America, and the prelims will stream for free on Fight TV. So you have there, and also on Saturday, Fight TV will have ACB 63. So you want to check out those cards. Also, my buddy Tim Loy and Casey Oxine, of course, of the Valor Hour, they have a fight card coming up on Friday. It's Valor Fights presents Fight Night at the Shed. You can get a complete preview of that fight card on this week's episode of the Valor Hour. And of course, speaking of that fight card, if you head over to themmareport.com, you can watch the interview that I did with Jacob Clemens, who is going to be in the main event of that fight card as he defends his amateur flyweight title against Diego Bautista. Also this week on themmareport.com, I'll have an interview with Logan Neal, who's going to be looking to snap a 2-fight losing streak on that fight card. Of course, all of the Valor Fights events do stream there on Flow Combat. So be sure. So a ton of MMA to take in. I will tell you this. I do plan to watch the PFL card on Saturday night, or Friday night, excuse me, on NBCSN. If you're not familiar, this is actually the first event for the PFL. When it was initially announced, that the relaunch from going from the WSOF to the PFL was actually not going to take place until the beginning of the year. However, it is actually this event that is taking place on. It's taking place after a NASCAR race or the series underneath NASCAR. I'm not a NASCAR fan, so I couldn't tell you, but I know this is a big weekend in Daytona Beach for the July race, which I think back in the day I think it was the Pepsi 400 or whatever it's called now. I'm just not a NASCAR fan, but I think it's a 250 mile race on Friday night, but after that's over, this fight card will be taking place at Daytona International Speedway. I actually had somebody I know here locally, they had asked me, they said, hey, you can go up Daytona Beach to watch that PFL event. I was like, I don't think I'd want to deal with the crowds, because you get up there, because I think this fight card actually doesn't start to like 10 or 10:30 on Friday night, so I just wouldn't want to deal with the crowd. So I'll be sitting on my couch. I'll have a cocktail in hand, and I'll watch this event. Of course, it's got some notable names on this fight card. The main event, welterweight matchup, John Fitch taking on Brian Foster. The co-main event is at the light heavyweight division. Hani Marks going to take on Samino Rama. Also, you have a lightweight matchup, Herman Torrado against Joel Zeferino, and also another lightweight matchup as Carlos Fodor takes on Jason High. Of course, John Fitch, the last time we saw John Fitch, he did retain the WSOF welterweight title back in the end of last year, December 31st, a decision win there over Jake Shields. After that fight was over, he had kind of talked about that maybe retirement was going to happen. Obviously, that is not taking place here. And of course, it's been a fairly good run for Jake Shields in the World Series of Fighting. Do have those two falters against Josh Berkman and Ross Milparjaros, but when you look at what else he's done, the split decision win against Marcelo Alfaya, decision win against Dennis Hallman, decision wins against Yushin Okami, and decision wins against Joel Zeferino and Jake Shields. And the crazy, one of those, you talk about just crazy stats, and look, and John Fitch is a guy that not a lot of people are going to go out of their way to watch him fight just because of his style. But the last time that John Fitch got a stoppage victory, you have to go back to June the 12th of 2007. That was at UFC Fight Night 10. We just had UFC Fight Night 112, give a little perception of that along with the date, but got a win over Rowan Carnero there, a submission win. But since then, it has been nothing but decisions for him. Definitely a guy that has a style that just doesn't appeal to a lot of fans. And then, of course, you look who's going to be standing across from him there in the Decagon, Brian Foster. He is coming off a submission win against Luis Firmino. He has fought at welterweight and lightweight. This is him moving up to welterweight to take on John Fitch here. Of course, he had a great fight last year against Justin Gaethje. And I think the key in this matchup is can Brian Foster keep this fight on the feet? If Brian Foster can keep this fight on the feet, I like his chances in this fight. However, I think that John Fitch ultimately gets this fight to the ground, and I think that you'll see John Fitch work his way to a three-round decision. But if this fight can stay on the feet, it will be interesting. But also, when John Fitch, if and when he gets this fight to the ground, he definitely has to be concerned about the submission game of Brian Foster. That is the main event. The co-main event, I'm very interested in Samino Rama in this matchup. Of course, we all remember Samino Rama came onto the scene, became the World Series of Fighting heavyweight champion back in 2014, got a knockout win in 51 seconds against Derek Maimon, ends up losing the heavyweight title in his first fight. Then he's supposed to have, light heavyweight matchups at WSOF 34, originally supposed to take on Josh Copeland. Josh Copeland pulls out of the event, and then supposed to take on Kevin Sears. That event ends up being canceled. And then he was at World Series of Fighting 30, what ended up being World Series of Fighting 34. Of course, that event was initially supposed to take beginning of November, ends up getting moved back to the end of December, makes his light heavyweight debut and gets a win over Jake Hune. Now he takes on Hani Marks. And, Samino Rama is a guy that, he wasn't a big heavyweight anyway. You looked at when he weighed in at heavyweight, 235 pounds, 227 pounds, was never a big heavyweight. So moving down to light heavyweight made a lot of sense. And when you look at 205 pounds, and this is just not not in UFC and Bellator, you know, any promotion. It's just, it's a division that you talk to promoters and they'll say light heavyweight and heavyweight and middleweight are three of the hardest divisions to go out there and find talent. And Samino Rama is a guy that has moved to the United States for his training, and now he takes on Hani Marks. Of course, everyone remembers Hani Marks from his times in the UFC, and since leaving the UFC, he is 2-2. He enters this fight following a loss at M1 Challenge 77. That was back in just in May of last month. So you're talking about just over a month of returning. He lost via submission there in the first round. Of course, this will be his second fight in the World Series of Fighting. He won his promotional debut against Cully Butterfield. Since then, he's had some issues that ultimately did not allow fights to take place. He was supposed to fight World Series of Fighting 19 against Thiago Silva. Ends up having to pull out of that fight. Then he was supposed to fight Dave Branch at World Series of Fighting 20. He had to pull out of that fight after being hospitalized due to his weight cut. And, of course, since then, he lost in Shooto, Brazil, got a win over Tony Lopez in King of the Cage. That was back in February, which was his first fight in almost exactly 1 year. And, of course, coming off that loss back at M1 Challenge. So I do like Samino Rama to win that fight, and we'll see how well that fight does go between those two guys. But that's a co-main event of the fight card. And then, of course, the other two matchups are 155-pound fights, Herman Torrado versus Joel Zeferino and Carlos Fodor against Jason High. I think a lot of people will remember Herman Torrado from his time in Bellator. You know, he had some issues there in Bellator, but he has been on a roll since that majority draw against Justin Baseman there at Bellator 115. He's had three fights, all in Gladiator Challenge, all those fights ending in the first round. Submission wins in two of those three fights. He has got a 49-second win by submission, a 7-second win by TKO, KO, and a submission win in 126 seconds. And according to Tapology, those three opponents have a combined record of 0-11. Yes, Herman Torrado, a guy who enters this fight 14-3-1. The combined records, according to Tapology, is 0-4-11. Actually, as I click on the fighters that are actually a part of that, that first win against was against Chris Navas, who is now 0-3. CJ Baines, who is now 1-23. And the other one was against Roman Belal, who is 0-3. And Gladiator Challenge is one of those promotions that, you know, people have a lot of questions about matchmaking. And so it's obviously a huge step up in competition. I mean, those were three showcase matchups there for Herman Torrado. So we'll see how he goes there against Joel Zeferino. Of course, Joel Zeferino enters this fight following that TKO win over Jason High back at World Series of Fighting 33. So this is his first fight since October. Was initially slated to take on Justin Gaethje at World Series of Fighting 34, but had to pull out due to an injury. Prior to that fight against Jason High, he had lost back-to-back fights against the two men that are going to be in the main event, Brian Foster and John Fitch. Of course, we all, if you remember that was his loss to Foster was on the same night that was the lightweight tournament. He beat Brian Foster in the opening round, then goes on to beat George Patino, and then Brian Foster ends up getting back into the tournament. Of course, that was that one-night tournament, ends up losing, and then, of course, loses to John Fitch when he got a shot there at the welterweight title. I do like Joel Zeferino to win that fight. And then the final matchup there is Carlos Fodor versus Jason High. And Carlos Fodor is coming off a win against Ben Fodor. Prior to that, he had lost against Luis Firmino. And for Jason High, he enters his fight following a loss to Joel Zeferino. Prior to that, he had won back-to-back fights against Esteban Papayan and Mike Ricci. I like Jason High in this matchup. But as I said, I will definitely be watching on Friday night on NBCSN. I believe the main card starts at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. So looking forward to seeing kind of the relaunching of the World Series of Fighting, now known as the Pro Fighters League. How different of a promotion is it from you know, the last time we saw that promotion there fight. So we'll see how well that goes on Friday night. And as I mentioned, a ton of other MMA action taking on Friday night. LFA 15 on Friday night as well. Of course, later on here in this podcast, you're going to hear from one of the men. It's going to be the main event, Richard Odoms, who's going to be fighting there for the inaugural heavyweight title. Now, to get into some news here, this week the UFC did announce that the pay-per-view that was slated for August the 19th has been canceled, and now UFC 216, which was slated for September 9th in Edmonton, is now UFC 215. And with everything going on in Edmonton, it really, I am a little surprised to see that maybe that the UFC has not pulled out of going to Edmonton, but they are. So we'll see what happens there. Also, you've probably seen the news on Courtney Casey and the battle she has been going through. And, you know, I listened to her interview on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, and noting the fact that basically her team found out through the media about this drug test from following her fight against Jessica Aguilar there back at UFC 211. And there was a great piece on bloodyelbow.com written by Ian Kidd, who just outlined this timeline of everything that happened with Courtney Casey. And if you have not read this piece, I highly recommend going out there. But, you know, he gives a timeline of how exactly everything went down. He talks in the article, it starts on May the 26th when the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation released information to Mark Ramondi of MMAfighting.com that Courtney Casey had failed a drug test at UFC 211. Now, let me just know here. There's a difference between failing and having elevated levels of testosterone. And, you know, I think this ultimately goes into kind of, you know, the way people are going to perceive Courtney Casey, even though she is clearly innocent, and Jeff Nowitzki and USADA have, you know, told the TDLR that she is innocent. And in this article, Ian Kitts notes that this was news to Casey, who had not been informed of the violation, and finds out from someone in her camp that MMAfighting.com had contacted them for comment. Now, that same day, after Ramondi had sent the information, Courtney receives an email from the TDLR informing her that she has failed a test due to elevated TE ratio and that it is, quote unquote, is strong and convincing evidence that she used drugs. At this point, it must be noted an elevated TE ratio is not considered a strong or conclusive evidence of PED used by a competent anti-doping regulatory bodies. The email also stated that she had until May 30th to respond to the TDLR and for her to request her B sample to be tested at the laboratory of her choice if she pays for it. Now, should be noted, kind of fast forwarding this, the UFC ends up paying for all of this. Now, the story goes on to say that Courtney ends up calling Jeff Nowitzki, who is the UFC's vice president of athlete health and performance. And Jeff is basically, for those who do not know, he is basically the barrier between fighter USADA or fighter commission. He is the person that, you know, fighters are to reach out to. And there was a lot of people when Jeff Nowitzki was hired were questioning whether he was truly going to help the athletes or he was trying to basically help catch the athletes on performance enhancing drugs. But, you know, in seeing various stories, it's very clear that Jeff Nowitzki is there to help these fighters out. Now, she informed Nowitzki of the situation. Nowitzki believes an error has been made because he has copies of the drug test results from Texas event and no one tested positive. Now, upon further inspection, he realizes Casey has an atypical TE ratio that shouldn't count as a fail, but he figures that maybe Texas made a mistake and calls him. The TDLR official tells Nowitzki that they are following USADA guidelines and that a TE ratio above 1.4 to 1 is a fail. Nowitzki points out that this is incorrect understanding of USADA rules and inquires if the proper isotope ratio mass spectrometry, IRMS, following up testing was performed. The official doubled down on his position that the IRMS testing isn't needed under USADA and WADA guidelines. Ian Kidd writes, it is. On May 30th, Courtney Casey sends an email to the TLR stating that she wants to have her B-sample tested at the WADA-accredited lab in Salt Lake City and requested that IRMS testing be performed on the sample to exonerate her. She also gave the TLR permission request to her testing records for USADA. Now, this is something that you've seen with Jessica Penne, and I think you're going to see, you know, kind of where USADA basically has a collection of data where they can kind of go through it. Now, in another email, Jeff Nowitzki sends multiple TDLR officials copies of WADA guidelines proving a 4-to-1 TE ratio requires follow-up IRMS testing before it's considered a positive result. And as he verbally informed them on May 26 and supplies further documentation about why this guideline is in place and why a 4-to-1 ratio shouldn't be considered a failure on its own. On June the 1st, Nowitzki emails the TDLR again asking when a reply can be expected. June 4th, the TDLR still hasn't responded to Casey's email, and not even with a confirmation. She sends up a follow-up email. Jeff Nowitzki also hasn't received a reply from the TDLR at this point. June 8th, Charles Johnson, assistant general counsel at the TDLR, emails Jeff Nowitzki to tell him that what steps Casey needs to take to get her B sample tested. This is the first time anyone from the TDLR has supplied Nowitzki with this information a full 2 weeks. Yes, you heard that right. A full 2 weeks after the news of Casey's quote-unquote fail was released to the media. June the 9th, Jason DeBoard, an investigator with the TDLR, contacts Casey and asks her what she took that elevated her testosterone. And Ian Kidd writes in this, he goes, remember, her test result did not actually show elevated testosterone, just an elevated TE ratio that was likely caused by reduced epitestosterone. She ends up telling Jason DeBoard that she has been informed that her birth control may have lowered her epitestosterone, which he doesn't appear to understand. This was the last time anyone from the TDLR had contacted Courtney Casey. In addition, Jeff Nowitzki responded to Charles Johnson, who is the assistant general counsel for the TDLR, with documentations of WADA guidelines showing that Casey's initial result shouldn't have been considered a failure, and further stating her sample is being sent to the Salt Lake City lab for proper follow-up testing. Johnson replies to an email informing Jeff Nowitzki that he will be out of the office for the following week, but would review the material submitted and discuss when he returned. He never responded to Nowitzki again regarding that. That was June the 9th, okay? So now fast forward to June the 22nd. So this is last week, where the Austin Mobile Drug Testing Lab, which took and tested Casey's original sample, is informed that her B sample came back clean after testing. That information is sent, which clearly exonerates Casey, and that information was sent to the TDLR and Jeff Nowitzki. Nowitzki emails results to several Texas officials, including Johnson, asking whether or not the TDLR will be retracting Courtney Casey's positive result today and what steps there would be. Fast forward now to June 24th. Courtney Casey's reputation clearly has been tarnished for multiple weeks. The TDLR hasn't responded to Nowitzki or Casey, informing them of their plans in light of this evidence. They've also neglected to make any public statement, which multiple reporters have reached out to them. And of course, Courtney Casey was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani on Monday, and I will tell you, I had someone in the industry who I was texting back and forth with about this piece. It was just a tremendous piece written by Ian Kidd that basically we were saying, like, man, she has got a I would imagine any lawyer would take that case immediately and file a defamation lawsuit against the Texas Department of License and Regulation. I have no idea what they're doing there in Texas. You know, there was an article recently on MMAfighting.com where Nowitzki mentioned that the UFC may now steer away from going to Texas over this situation. So I truly hope, I mean, clearly Courtney Casey is innocent after all the, you know, the documentation and drug testing and testing of the B sample is out there. The TDLR, first off, there's a couple things they need to do. They need to issue a public apology, not only to Courtney Casey, but to Jeff Nowitzki and the UFC. They need to now overturn her fight back to a win. Of course, they overturned it to a no contest. It needs to be overturned back to a win. And, you know, and you just, at the end of the day, you just feel bad for Courtney Casey, because this is, you know, and this is one of those problems I have when we talk about drug testing. And I know we are in a society that we want our news now. We want it first. But, you know, it's like when we see those statements that come out from USADA about, you know, fighter, you know, A is facing a potential anti-doping policy violation. You know, I would rather that not come out, because even if the fighter is cleared, their name is still tarnished. And I don't know if Courtney Casey will ever be able to rebound from this, because people are always going to bring that up. There are going to be people on social media that are going to say things. You know, she mentioned about comments that have been posted on her Instagram and various social media platforms. So I hope that there is some type of apology. And this is where Greg Alvarez, the executive director of that commission, needs to step up, and he needs to do something, because this is a bad situation, and they have completely screwed up Courtney Casey's career to this point. It's great to see Jeff Nowitzki really doing what he can to help the fighter, and also great to hear the UFC paying for this additional drug test to help clear that fighter. Very great things to hear coming there out of the UFC and Courtney Casey. And so I hope that this situation is finished here pretty soon, because all signs do seem pretty clear that she's innocent, and that the TDLR deserves, you know, needs an apology. And I think the question is a fighter should never find out about a potential issue with a drug test from a media member. They should find that out from either the commission or the promotion that they fight for. My understanding the whole time has always been is that when there is some issue with a drug test, that the commission has to notify immediately the fighter or the fighter's manager or the promotion. They have to get in touch with one of them. And of course, Jeff Nowitzki wasn't aware of this. So just a really crappy situation that has gone on there with Courtney Casey. Now, when it comes to some other news, Scott Coker did reveal this week that the plans are, they are targeting to have Brent Primus versus Michael Chandler rematch at some point. Of course, you know, all signs, you know, Michael Chandler does not have a broken leg. So great news there. And by the way, speaking of Brent Primus, I'm probably going to Brent Primus, excuse me. I'm probably going to have an interview with Brent. It'll either be on the MMA Report later this week, or maybe even on this podcast next week, as I reached out to his management team, and Brent is still traveling back home to the Pacific Northwest. And when he gets back home, going to have a little interview with him and talk about the fight and the criticisms that are out there about that fight. But Scott Coker revealed that is where they want to go. Also revealed that Ryan Bader's first title defense is targeted to be against King Mo Lawal. I thought they might go with Lent Vassell. I really did. But they're going to go there with King Mo. Of course, King Mo, I saw the strength and conditioning coach down there, American Top Team, had put out on Instagram a couple of days ago that King Mo was back in the gym. Also, speaking of Bellator, a tremendous signing by Bellator. You know, we talk about the tremendous signs of, you know, guys like Rory McDonald and Ryan Bader and various other fighters who have competed in the UFC. But, you know, they have done a great job of going out there and finding those guys that maybe they haven't turned pro yet. They've only had a couple fights, and more times than not, they have that wrestling background, and they signed Logan Storley, and he is going to make his Bellator debut at Bellator 181, as he's going to take on Camille Haley, part of that preliminary card. By the way, if you have not seen that Bellator 181 card, while yes, it did have a change there at the main event of that fight card, of course, it was supposed to be Patricky Pitbull taking on Derek Campos. However, now it's Brandon Gertz taking on Derek Campos there. You know, also that main card's a really solid main card. You've got Kendall Grove versus John Salter, Emily Decote versus Valerie Letourneau. Also, you have Steve Garcia against Steve Warren. But the prelims, man, Bellator, you know, and that was one of the questions kind of, you know, when you saw how much they had stacked the deck with, you know, the Madison Square Garden card, was what could they do after it? And they have done just a tremendous job of just loading up the preliminary cards. You've got AJ Matthews versus Andre Filho, which is just a great matchup. I'm hoping to actually chat with AJ Matthews prior to this event, because I remember one of the last times I did an interview with him, you know, of course, he had moved up the middleweight. He had told me that he was done at 170 pounds when he's returning. So interested to kind of hear exactly why he decided to go on there. Also, you've got Amanda Bell versus Alexis Dufresne. Big matchup there in the featherweight division. Also, you have Justin Lawrence versus Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson is one of those guys that has kind of been a staple of those Thackerville cards. But Bellator has done a great job of really stacking the deck there at Bellator 181, and looking for that fight card. That's none until July 14th, which will be the next Bellator event. Also, speaking of the Texas Commission, they did reject the appeal of Dustin Poirier in terms of his matchup against Eddie Alvarez. Of course, those two guys have been going back and forth on social media. Nick Diaz and Leslie Smith are both being sued by their former management group, and the management group is taking the fighters to court for allegedly skipping out on commissions and conspiring with an attorney to break management agreements. That management group is seeking over $1 million in damage, so we'll see what happens there. On Monday, Derek Lewis came out of his short-lived retirement, which I think everyone was very excited, because he is clearly one of the most entertaining fighters, and particularly on social media. Also, the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, which is going to start July 11th. Of course, you're going to hear from Greg Rebello here in a little bit, who is going to be on that first fight card. That fight series is going to run from July 11th to August 29th. Vitaly Minnikov is hinting about returning to Bellator. Scott Coker did confirm on Monday that he is still under contract with Bellator. And of course, when he fights in Russia, there's not really much Bellator can do about that. But maybe that says something, you know, about maybe they just can't get out of his deal. I actually believe Vitaly is actually now represented by Ali Abdelaziz. I don't want to go 100%, but I'm pretty sure I have to reach out to Ali. But I'm pretty sure Ali does represent Vitaly Minnikov now. Now, when it comes to some fight bookings that have been announced by various promotions, coming up on July 6th is Fight Nights Global 70. Rosamal Pajares will be taking on Alexei Ivanov on that card. The Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, July 11th. This is the only fight card that's been officially announced in terms of the matchups by I guess you'd say the UFC, even though these are not UFC fights. MMA-today.com has done a great job of reporting, so you definitely give those guys a follow. Matt Bissette, Kurt Hallebaut is going to be the main event. Great matchup there at 145 pounds. Really surprised to see Kurt Hallebaut going back down to 145 pounds. I thought that was something that would not happen there. Greg Rebell going to take on Zhu Anhua. Also, Boston Saman taking on Ricky Turcos, and Charles Byrd taking on Justin Jones, and Manny Vasquez taking on Joby Sanchez. Of course, Manny, the former the legacy champion there, taking on Joby Sanchez. Of course, we all remember Joby from his time in the UFC. Mentioned about Bellator 181, now Derek Campos versus Brandon Gertz, which now leads to Bellator 183, which is now September 23rd. Patricia Pitbull takes on Benson Henderson, and Roy Nelson takes on Javi Ayala. So big matchup there for Javi Ayala. On July 14th will be LFA 16, as Andrea Lee is going to defend the flyweight title against Davina Marcel. On July 16th is UFC Fight Night 113. Lena Landsberg has pulled out of that fight card. She was slated to take on Leslie Smith. Leslie Smith will now take on UFC newcomer Amanda Lemos. On July 22nd is Victory FC 58. Dakota Cochran versus Maki Patillo has been added to that fight card. That is going to be the main event of that fight card. And one other fight booking to mention, August 5th, ONE Championship is going to be headlined by their bantamweight champion Bibiano Fernandez, takes on Andrew Leone. Bibiano Fernandez is, in my mind, is the best bantamweight not currently in the UFC in Bellator, and I think you could probably make the case that he is the best bantamweight not in the UFC. And this had to be 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. There was a lot of rumors that he was going to sign with the UFC, and I think even the UFC had announced it that he had signed with them, and ultimately that did not take place, and fighting over there and won championships, which, by the way, he's one of the main training partners for Demetrius Johnson. So a nice little matchup there. Bibiana Fernandez, definitely, if you're ever looking to find those guys outside the UFC and Bellator, check out Bibiana Fernandez is definitely one of them. Of course, now coming up now, I'm going to get into the interview portion of this podcast. You're going to hear from Rob Font, Gregor Bell, Richard Owens, Andres Quintana, and Matt Murray. After the interviews are over, I want to talk about what is going on with Fox Sports and the media side. I'm sure everyone has seen they've kind of made a business decision going away from written articles, video, and all their written staff was let go. So after the interviews, I'm going to kind of give my thoughts on that. I don't know if that's a subject you care about, or maybe there's someone you know that wants to get in the media. I'll give them my thoughts just as someone who has been in the media since 2002. But first up, going to let you hear my conversation with Rob Font. He is going to be in the featured preliminary bout on Fight Pass for UFC 213 next Saturday night. Going to be taking on Douglas Silva de Andrade. Of course, his last fight was that win back in December. And I started off my conversation with Rob by asking what has been going on since that win in December.
Just a lot of training. Got to travel a little bit. Not travel, but go see my family in Florida. And just kind of picked up golf. Really, that's it. Just been golfing a little bit, trying to stay busy with that, and just cross-training as much as possible, and just trying to stay busy.
So who introduced you to golf?
Rico DeShulo and Calvin Cater and my manager, Tyson Chartier. They took me out and got hooked, and it was over. I've been at the range every day since.
So, I mean, is this something where, is it just, was it instant love? Did you kind of get hooked? Or are you kind of like, you play 18 holes and it's like all of a sudden about, you're having a crappy day up until about the 16th hole, and then those last two holes, you have a great day and it gets exactly, you right back in.
Exactly. Obviously, the first shot was horrible. We played scramble, so we were playing best ball. Got to maybe seven holes and I got like maybe two good shots. And from there, it was over. I thought, oh my God, I'm hooked. You know, from there, it was... bought me a cheap pair of clubs, got some shoes, and that was it. I've been at the range every day. We played three more times since then. I was supposed to play yesterday, but didn't work out. And man, just been doing that. Like I said, cross training as much as possible with all the killers in New England, and just trying to stay busy.
Is it one of those things where you need something to get your mind off the fight game? And, you know, some guys may say it's TV or video games or whatever it may be, but for you, it's golf. Golf is what it's an escape from the fight game?
Yeah, no, definitely. I try to find a different hobby, you know, and I first thought of trying to play with shooting, like, guns at the range and all that. And I felt uncomfortable with how many guys were walking around with, you know, loaded guns and, like, the first one I went to was in New Hampshire, and it's just like, I remember when I was younger, I was in Florida, like, you had to go in there, you had to show your ID, you had to get your guns checked, and there was a guy, like, watching you the whole time. We walked in, it was just, you walked in, you paid for your ammo, and you just went shooting, and it was just, I didn't like that feeling of being in the range like that, so I was like, all right, shooting guns is not for me. And then, Calvin and Rico asked me if they wanted to go golfing, and it was over. I got hooked from there, but, I think, you know, finding something else besides grinding all day and, you know, doing jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and, you know, watching fights, YouTube, UFC Fight Pass, you know, watching all the boxing fights and Bellator and all that kind of, you know, you need a break from that. And, I think golf is huge. You know, I'm sitting there, I'm playing golf on Xbox. I'm watching the PGA Tour, you know, I'm watching old highlights of, stuff on YouTube. So it's a new break from MMA and jiu-jitsu and all the combat sports stuff.
Would any of your friends that you grew up with just find it extremely odd that you have turned into loving golf?
Everybody has. Like, they're like, what are you doing? Like, they're like, on your Snapchat, I keep seeing you playing golf. Like, are you serious? Are you really playing? Or is this like a charity thing? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm really playing, bro. Like this is, it's addicting. It's fun. There's so much that goes into it. There's so many little details that go into just a simple putt. You know how to simple, but it's not simple, but like, it's just a putt. Like, put it in the hole. It sounds easy, right? But it's so much stuff to it. I still don't know how to read the green and all that, but I think most of it's luck right now, but I think I'm developing my own game and finding my own swing and all that, but it's so much. Hopefully this time next year I can get really like play in like these local tournaments and like kind of keep up with these guys, but it's hard, man. It's definitely hard, but I think I'm up for the challenge.
Of course, it's been a great run for you here in the UFC, 3-1. I mentioned coming off that win back in December. I always know that there's, you know, little changes that you make as you evolve as a fighter. Any little you know, things you switched up since the last fight and leading into this fight?
I've been in more boxing gyms this camp. There's New England's pretty big in boxing. There's pretty much good gyms in every town, from Boston to anywhere else. And I live in Woburn, so I'm at the local Woburn boxing gym once a week, just hitting the bags, kind of being around all the pro boxers out here. Haverhill's maybe 30-40 minutes away from me. They have some real good boxers there, and so I've been doing a lot of boxing sparring, just getting used to that pressure, that punch count. And, getting used to just seeing a lot of the body shots, head shots, and, you know, really getting in the pocket, staying in the pocket. And because, you know, Muay Thai, it's a long distance game. You know, it's the kicks, the knees, it's a real long game. And then boxing is, more of a shorter game. You're closer, the range is different. So I'm trying to find both ranges and really master both ranges. And by doing that, I think my wrestling got a little better. So I'm setting my punches up a little closer. To my takedown. So, but for this one, it is definitely, we've been boxing a lot. I want to give a huge shout out to all the boxers, and everybody's been working with me, and all the coaches that's been letting me come into the gym and letting me get a lot of work with their fighters.
Of course, we're talking the day after UFC Fight Night 112 in Oklahoma City. Saw you tweeting about Tony Martin. Of course, Tony trains up there as well.
Yeah.
Is that just one of those things when you see your teammate go out there and have a performance, get another win in the UFC? Is that just basically just gives a little more motivation for you? I mean, you know,
bro, I was eating dinner at the time. Girlfriend made me some dinner. I ate it as I was watching the fight. Screaming, we're both going cheering for him, screaming. It was a great fight. Johnny Cage brought the best out of him, and from then I said, you know what, I got motivated. I went on a 2-mile jog and came back home, fell asleep for a little bit, got back up, started playing some more Xbox, and then I finally got in touch with him. We talked a little bit, but yeah, it's huge motivated to watch your teammate and see how hard he works, and he's been busting his ass this for this camp, especially because he called this fight. He wanted this fight. He was talking trash, and he's been wanting this fight for a long time. So you really got to back it up, and you saw, he was in there still talking. So he had a rough first round, but a slower start. He got some good shots in. He got caught with some good shots, and I think that kind of woke him up. You just seen his confidence just soar right through the second round to the third round, and I really do believe if he would have pushed for that takedown a little more towards that third round, he could have submitted him. You saw when he grabbed the arm, I tried to watch it. I think he was almost tapping, but give him like 10 more seconds, I think he would have took his arm home with him.
And of course, your fight here at UFC 213 against Douglas Silva de Andrade. First off, were you familiar with Douglas? He's got a great record, 24-1, one no contest, 2-1 in the UFC. Before getting this fight offer, was this a guy that was already on your radar?
I was supposed to make my debut against this guy. I don't know exactly what injury he had, but they called me and, hey, we got this guy from Brazil. He told me the record. I was like, wow, he's got a lot of experience, but it's my debut. I'm not gonna say no, of course not. Like, let's do it. Maybe 3 weeks before that fight happened. I mean, it was supposed to happen. He got injured, and that's how the group fight. So I knew exactly who it was. I watched two of the fights that he had in the U or one of the, at that time. I think it was one fight that he had in the UFC, and I knew exactly who he was. I watched some of his older stuff, and so yeah, I knew exactly who he was, and I knew after his last fight with Briones, this is definitely a fight we could potentially get for sure.
One of the things you always hear is guys will say, this is a great matchup for me because of whatever. Why do you feel this is a great matchup for you stylistically?
He's a stand-up. He's more of a stand-up guy. I think, if I would have any issues with anybody, it'd probably be more of those kind of like just pure grapplers. I just want to take it down and all that. Stand-up guy, I feel like if I can, be a better mixed martial artist than him, it can make an easy night for me. I just can't get in there and brawl out with him. Mix it up, change levels, attempt takedowns, put my hands on him, kicks, knees, elbows, put it all together. And I think, But then again, it's like you never know when you get out there, so it's tough, man. You know, so I you know, of course, in my mind, I think anybody's a good matchup for me. You know, tell me Godzilla wants to fight me, I'm trying to figure out how to beat Godzilla. But it's like you never know if you feel him, you never know how fast he is, so you get in there with him or how strong they are. But I'm confident in this matchup. I like it. I know he's going to bring the best out of me, and I'm ready to do this.
How do you make sure that you don't get into a brawl in a fight? Is that something that's just worked on in the training room of making sure that you don't kind of get in that type of situation?
Yeah, you know, me and Mark were talking like 2 days ago, and it was just like, if don't get greedy. You know, you hit him with two or three shots, you know, pick an angle, move. Two or three shots, pick an angle, move, shoot a takedown. You know what I'm saying? Two or three shots, pick an angle, drop a low kick. You know, give me something else. Like, we're always moving. He wants me always moving. But not like we did the Lineker fight, obviously moving backwards, moving forward and getting off to the side. Moving forward, getting off to the side, slipping punches. And if I'm constantly moving, I can't stand there in one spot and just go at it with them. Unless, obviously, I just got them hurt and then I just got to, you know, go for the kill. But, you know, like if it's not one of those things where I'm standing right in the middle, like, come on, let's go blow for blow, then I don't really see me getting into a brawl like that.
Well, obviously, everyone knows the goal is to go out there and win. But got to imagine one of the other goals is to go out there and get a performance of the night bonus, get that $50,000. But you're on an absolutely stacked card.
Yeah.
Is it could be a really long night for you? Let's just say you go out there and have a statement type win, first round stoppage, something along those lines. Doesn't it become like the next 5 hours is like the longest 5 hours of your life?
It's a gift and a curse. You know, it's you're out there, you got a big card, you're like, yes, I have a lot of eyes on me. You know, then it's like, well, damn. You also have Donald Cerrone and Robbie Lawler fight. What the hell? Like, you know, so you're excited about being there, watching them fight live. Then you're like, man, like, that's almost like guaranteed to fight of the night, you know? So you're like, shit, like, how do I got to really go out there and really put on a great performance. But then, you know, when you break it down, you're like, whatever, just go out there and get the W. But, yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough to fight on these big cards like this. But even, like, look at Tony Martin, you know? Like, that was an awesome fight. And then, you know, say, I thought that for sure, all right, we're good for, he's pretty good for the bonus. And then you see the rest of the fights, you're like, oh man. Like, so it's so tough with all these, everybody, you know, everybody's always getting better. Everybody's always, you know, evolving. So it's tough to get that bonus, but, especially when you're, you know, you got the champ, you got Lawler, you know, Cerrone, you got Pettis, like, come on, man. Like, it's crazy. There's so many fights on this card that it's definitely going to be hard, but I'm going to try. I'm going to put my hat in there and try, so for sure.
Does it make fight week a little easier for you, though, because there's all the attention's on everyone else, the attention's not on you? Does it, yeah, in a way, I mean, you talk about it's a gift and a curse, but do you kind of look at that and say, hey, man, this does make it a little easier because, you know what, I'm under the radar.
Yeah, exactly. I'm under the radar. It does. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have a lot of media obligations. And then, like I said, and then it's also a confidence boost. I do believe, you know, when you're around that many great fighters and you see, like, oh, wait a minute, I'm just as quick as these guys. I'm just as sharp as these guys, you know, like, it does give you a confidence boost. You're like, all right, I'm right here. You know, like, when I made my debut, you know, it was, you know, I had to be Ronda Rousey was there, Machida was there. Who else? Everybody, BJ Penn was there. He wasn't fighting that night, but he was out there, you know, he fought the day before. But there were so many great fighters, and it's like, wait, bro, you belong here. This is, you know, this is nothing new. This is that you belong here. You see them hitting pads. You see them rolling. You're just like, you're right there. You see them asking questions about simple things like, what do you think about me fixing this triangle? And you're like, wait a minute, you're one of the best fighters in the world. You're still fixing triangles, a white belt move, you know, and you're still like, you know, everybody's human and everybody, you know, just wants to get better. So it's definitely it's good to have that many great fighters around you. And I do feel like you just being around guys like I said the other day, I just being around Joe Lozon, I feel like I get better. Not even training, just being around, talking to him and watching how he teaches class or how he, you know, walks around or warms up and gets ready for the class. Like, you pick up on things like that and you learn a lot, you know, so. You said it's a gift and a curse because, you know, it's tough to get that bonus when you have all those great fighters on that card.
But, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch your fight on Saturday, July 8th, live on UFC Fight Pass, a featured preliminary bout of UFC 213. If people aren't following you on social media, let them know where to follow you at.
Definitely. So I'm Twitter at Rob S. Font, Instagram at Rob Font, Snapchat at The Font, T-H-A-F-O-N-T, and then Facebook at Rob Font.
And I really do appreciate Rob coming on the podcast to talk about his fight coming up next Saturday night. UFC 213, of course, the night before, is going to be the Ultimate Fighter Season 25 finale. Michael Johnson, Justin Gaethje, cannot wait for that fight. And a lot of great stuff there from Rob talking about, you know, taking up golf, a golf being that hobby that he has to kind of get his mind off the fight game. And you know, in every fighter, you hear that more and more, that you know, there's something they do that just kind of, it's a way for them to relax, get their mind off the fight game. You know, some guys, you hear it's, you know, television, other you say it's hanging out with the family or hanging out with friends or watching video or playing video games. But for Rob, you know, he does mention he likes to play video games as well. But, you know, really getting into golf. And, you know, we'll see if he can be a contender there for a fight of the night or performance of the night bonus there against Douglas Silva de Andrade. Of course, that'll be the feature preliminary bout on Fight Pass for UFC 213. Of course, next week I will have a preview podcast as myself and Daniel Gavon will preview the Ultimate Fighter Season 25 finale and UFC 213. UFC 213, a stacked main card. And, you know, I don't, you know, it's very similar to UFC 211 in how stacked it is. You know, will it be a success on pay-per-view? I don't know, but there's definitely a lot of fights on there that I am interested to see now. A couple of days after UFC 213, it will be the debut of the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. Now, it's full disclosure, this is not a UFC fight card. This is its own entity. And I guess almost in a way, you can kind of say it's in more ways than not, it's just a tryout to get into the UFC in reality. But one of the men that's going to be on that debut fight card is Greg Rebello. Of course, we have had Greg on the podcast multiple times in the past. Of course, we all know from his fights there in CES MMA. And, you know, Greg is one of those guys I always thought that, you know, could be his call to UFC could be coming any moment. He is a 35-year-old heavyweight. And so when I started to hear that Greg was going to be on this fight card, I thought that, hey, he's going to be taking on a younger heavyweight. But he's actually the younger heavyweight in this fight. He's about 2 months younger than his opponent here. And I started off by talking in my conversation with Greg about actually being the younger fighter in this matchup.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, if I fought in the UFC, I would be one of the youngest guys in the division. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, all those guys are dinosaurs, man. They're like fine wine. They get better with age. So
obviously, it was just revealed a couple of days ago that this fight is happening. Of course, you have known here for a couple of weeks that this fight was happening. You know, and where you've been at with your career, did you ever have that thought process of like, am I ever going to get this call? Is this call going to come? Or did you ever kind of have those self doubts?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ups and downs in MMA. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not like boxing. You don't need to go on a 30 fight win streak to get anywhere. You know what I mean? If you string together a few good wins and you get the right opportunity, you know what I mean, late replacement or whatever, you can get that phone call. So, I mean, I never gave up on it. You know what I mean? It's just, but yeah, it is frustrating because you see, you know, some of the other guys, whether it's guys on Access TV or guys that locally that I know training, get their opportunity. So you're kind of like, all right, you know what I mean? I know I'm on the right track, but yeah, it's, you know, I would lie to you if I was telling you it wasn't frustrating, but I knew I would get my opportunity.
And this is, I think this Tuesday Night Contender Series is really going to be a showcase for Northeast fighters. They've already announced, of course, you're on this show. Matt Bissett's going to be in the headliner of the first fight card. There's other names I've heard that just have not been officially announced by the UFC. But it really just seems like since the UFC really doesn't come to the Northeast hardly at all, that this is, do you think this is going to be the best way for Northeast fighters to get into the UFC?
I think so, because I was talking to that about somebody the other day. You know, now that Conor McGregor is basically just a pay-per-view fighter, I mean, they're not going to come to Boston. You know what I mean? So they need to get some new fresh blood in here from Boston in order for them to come back here, you know? So I think they're definitely going to, you know, they're going to get a lot of guys. There's a lot of studs, man, in the Northeast. There's a lot of guys right on that cusp. So, you know, there's going to be more names coming out within the next few weeks soon.
And, of course, you're coming off that win against Kevin Sears. How do you assess your performance in that fight?
I'm kind of an F, to be honest with you. You know, I thought I should have finished him in the first round, but you know, once I got out there, I knew that I was the better fighter and I was just kind of like, all right, just don't get caught and keep doing what you're doing. But I'll give Kevin credit, man. I mean, I was better everywhere than him. I didn't get hit. I didn't get hurt. He didn't really give me a challenge at all. But he's tough, man. And the guy can take a beating. He kept on coming. I mean, I had him hurt quite a few times where I just, you know, I was like, all right, this fight's done. And then he kept coming back. You know what I mean? But I never really changed my pace. If I could go back, I would have put my foot on the gas pedal a little bit more. I knew that he was, if you watch Kevin's fights, a lot of times he'll take a beating in the first couple of rounds and then win in the third by gassing guys out. But my cardio is always top notch, man. I'm always in good shape. So, yeah, but I definitely would have put my foot on the gas pedal a little bit more.
And of course, your opponent here, Zou, 13-4 in his career. He's been on a great roll as of late. How is preparing for him different than preparing for Kevin?
Well, Kevin's more of a guy that wants to wrestle. You know what I mean? He's a big guy. He's a good wrestler. Zou's more of a guy that wants to stand up and box and trade. You know what I mean? So it's an easier preparation for me. You know, I like to stand up and fight. So Zou's a really tough guy. I mean, I definitely have had his name cross my path on the local level a few times, but you know, he was fighting in New Jersey. I was fighting up here. So it just didn't make sense for us to fight. You know what I mean? But he was a guy that definitely was on my radar. I knew that at some point, you know, he's really good and I knew that I was good. And it doesn't surprise me that we're crossing paths here, you know, but it's a great matchup for me. And it's, you know, I know Zou's a guy that likes to put on a show and star on.
Why do you feel it's a great matchup for you?
Well, we're both stand-up guys. You know what I mean? I don't have to worry about some wrestler diving at my legs and trying to take me down. You know what I mean? And if he does, my wrestling's good, so I'm not worried about it. But I know that I like watching Zou fight. I think he's got a great style. It's entertaining, and so is it mine, you know? So it's just – it's going to be a good one for the fans, for sure.
And this is a weird situation here because – it's going to be, as my understanding, it's in the tough gym. So, I mean, there's not going to be a lot of people in there. These are sanctioned fights. This isn't like the Ultimate Fighter. I think a lot of people don't understand that those are just exhibition fights. But then you're just a couple of days after, one of the biggest weekends of the year for the UFC International Fight Week, and you're not fighting local, so you're not worrying about the ticket sales, whatnot. So how does Fight Week change for you?
Honestly, I have a good group of people surrounding me, so I never really have to worry about ticket sales and all this other stuff. I have a lot of people that help me out, so there's never any pressure on me. You know what I mean? I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I don't worry. Nothing stresses me out. You know what I mean? If you see me in the locker room before the fight, man, half the time I'm just joking around and chilling. It's another day at the office for me. You know what I mean? I fought at the tough gym before. It's no big deal to me. Traveling obviously sometimes can be a pain in the butt, but that's just a part of the job. It's not a big deal. I go out actually Saturday where, the day of the fight, one of my boys and my teammates, Rob Font's fighting that night. So, I'm going to be going out hopefully to catch his fight, you know, before I land. But, it's just business as usual for me. It's nothing different.
Just had a chance to catch up with Rob. Did not know he's big in the golf now. Are you big in the golf?
No. I would rather watch grass grow than golf. But he texted me the other day and he was like, hey, man, you want to? It was his birthday this last weekend on Sunday, so happy birthday to Rob. And he was like, hey, you want to go golfing? And I'm like, golfing? I want to go golfing? Like, why would I want to? I don't know. It's just he loves it, though. Him and Calvin Cater and my manager Tyson and Rigo DeShulo, every weekend these guys are in these tournaments, and they're all nuts.
Yeah, he was telling me about that, and I guess kind of it's his way to kind of get his mind off the fight game, which every fighter's got to have that, right?
100%, man. You know, for me, I like to game. I like to play video games. I like to play basketball and hockey on the Xbox, and I'll play against all the other young punks that I train at my gym online. And that's kind of like my thing. That's like what I do to chill out, you know. But hey, he likes to play golf, so that's all good.
So everyone knows you like to rib on your teammates. Now, do you got the headset on and you're ribbing them as you're playing them?
Oh, of course, man. Yeah, you got to do it like that.
Is there a go-to game right now?
I like NBA. NBA 2K17 is like my go-to, man. Nobody can beat me.
Yeah, anyone knows you, follows you, they know you're a big Boston fan. So are you happy with the Celtics draft?
It's tough to say. You know what I mean? I do like the pick. I think Markelle Fultz is the ideal guy in the draft. But, you know, obviously it makes room for us in the future. But if the Lakers get Paul George and they're getting LeBron and all these guys, I mean, this pick's not going to turn out to be anything spectacular. You know what I mean? So who knows? I do like the pick. I wish, you know, we got the first pick for the first time ever. I wish we would have just taken Markelle Fultz, to be honest with you. And then we're going to sign either Blake Griffin or Gordon Hayward. But I'm not mad at the pick. You can't say yet because you don't know what the future holds. You don't know how the Lakers are going to be and how that pick's going to end up next year. Because we could possibly next year have the number one and the number two pick in the draft.
Life is so difficult. This coming from an Orlando Magic fan that I don't think we've played relevant basketball in a decade. If you ever want to see something bad, go look at the Orlando Magic's draft the last 10 years. It's really depressing. It's so depressing being a Magic fan.
So one of the guys that's that works for CES is a huge Orlando Magic fan, Fred. So every time I would fight, I would always bust his chops because he always had a Penny Hardaway jersey on. And yeah, they haven't been good since the Dwight Howard days. Ugh. And before that, the Shaquille O'Neal days.
Yeah, it's awful. But you look at this Dana White Contender Series, I kind of feel for CES a little bit. I mean, you know you're going to lose fighters, but their roster's getting ready here a little bit.
Yeah, well, CES and LFA, but you know what? It's good for them because, you know, people might be like, oh, they must be pissed off. But guess what? If seven guys from CES and 10 guys from LFA go up to the next level, guess what? If I'm a young guy that's an amateur turning pro, I'm going to be like, damn, man, all these guys are getting an opportunity to fight in the UFC and fight on Dana's show. Going through these promotions, I'm immediately going to want to sign up. You know, I train a lot of amateur guys that are going to be really good, man. You know, one kid at heavyweight, my buddy Jose, another kid, John Duma, who's a 155er. These guys are turning pro in August for CES. Mark my words, man. They're going to fill in the slots for all the guys that are getting bumped up. You know what I mean? It's just for CES, it just means a new crop of talent's going to come in. It's not a big deal at all.
And for you, I mean, yes, you've had the experience, you know, at the Tough Gym before. But, you know, there's going to be fans who this may be their first opportunity seeing you. You've been on Access TV multiple times now, UFC Fight Pass. What would you want those fans who've never seen you fight that are going to see you fight here on July 11th to know about you?
Well, I mean, they can go back and watch my fights and my highlights. You know what I mean? I'm exciting. I'm fun to watch. And, you know, my fights are always that way. So, listen, they're going to figure it out on July 11th that night. You know what I mean? I don't really have to explain myself to anybody. So they don't even have to look me up, but it's going to be fun, man. And they're going to enjoy it. I can guarantee you that.
Of course, along with being a fighter, you are a coach. You got any fighters with upcoming fights coming up here in the next couple weeks?
So obviously, I'm basically just focusing on my fight right now. But, you know, I had my buddy Fabio Chirant. He fought last week as an amateur down in Plymouth Memorial Hall for Cage Titans. He's an up-and-coming amateur at 205, man. He's a monster. My buddy Jose Campos, who is a guy who always helps me out, man. He's one of my main training partners. Him and Fabio Chirant helped me out in all my camps, man. They're both monsters, and they're both young. They're like 21, 22 years old. They're spring chickens. So these guys are both amateurs, and they helped me out a lot in my camps. And honestly, if they turn pro, they'd probably be at the top of the divisions right now in New England. So Jose Campos is the guy you're going to want to keep your eye on, man. He's a monster heavyweight. He's going to be fighting for CES in August. And trust me, you're going to know who he is. I can guarantee it.
Some people may find that a little weird. Say, hey, man, his main training partners are amateurs. But is it more about just, hey, these guys are fresh, and I know they're coming at me 100% every time?
Yep. You know, I like to have young guys, especially I train with a lot of wrestlers right out of the college room. You know what I mean? Because college wrestling's crazy. You know what I mean? So when these guys, I'm 35, man, but when these guys come in the room, they're 20 years old, 21 years old, fresh off the wrestling room mat. So those guys go hard, man. So for me to keep up with them and the fact that I do keep up with these guys, no problem. I know that I'm in shape and I know that I'm training hard. You know, Jose and Fabio, they're young guys, man. So they can train 3-4 times a day like nothing, you know? So it motivates me and it keeps me young. You know what I mean? It really does. It's all about who you surround yourself with, you know? So I train with these guys. Yeah, they might be amateurs, but mark my words, if Jose Campos went pro right now, I wouldn't argue him being the number one heavyweight in the Northeast.
Definitely got to pay attention to. Final thing, you know, these are not quote-unquote UFC fights, but I think everyone kind of considers it UFC. Is your view of like this is just basically a on-site job interview for the UFC? Is that the best way to describe, you know, kind of what's on the line here?
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. You know what I mean? It's kind of like dress to impress. You got to go out there and impress. You know what I mean? Win or lose, you got to impress out there. You know what I mean? And if Dana likes what he sees, maybe he'll give you a shot. I honestly don't know what to expect. I'm on the first episode. You know, when my manager Tyson Chartier called me, it was like new to me. I'm like, Dana White show, you know, what are you talking about? You know? And I don't know what to expect. You know what I mean? It's just another fight for me, and I'm just going to go out there and let it rip. You know what I mean?
I've said this countless time on previous shows where I think once fighters start seeing the pay for this show, because I'm pretty sure Nevada is going to release it out, I think a lot of fighters are going to start wanting to be on this show and based on what the pay is like on the regional scene. I never want to sit there and say, hey, what are you making? But I'll just say the numbers I'm hearing, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to be fighting on this show.
There's no argument here.
But Greg, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
My Instagram is gribsmma23, and my Twitter is grebello73. And obviously, people will enjoy following me on that because I like to bust everybody's chops and have a good time. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's it. That's my social media. So I'll see you guys on July 11th.
Greg, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. As always, good luck here on July 11th, the inaugural Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. And we're going to have more guys that are fighting on those fight cards here on future episodes of the MMA Report podcast. Now, coming up on Friday, it is LFA 15 in Oklahoma. And this fight card is going to be headlined by an inaugural heavyweight title matchup. And our next interview is one of the men that's going to be in this fight, and that is Richard Odoms. And I started off my interview with Richard by asking him what is the origin of his nickname, the Black Eagle.
It was a martial arts thing. Basically, black is just the ethnicity, and then the race, and then the eagle is just a masterful hunter. So master of hunters, so that's how I came up with that. And it was just like a tough man thing. The tough man competition said I needed to have a nickname. I was just going by just my name, and that's just how what I came up with. And the Rose Eagle is called the Black Eagle, so
okay,
that was a real good thing as far as the situation.
Of course, you've won four of your last five. That only loss came over in the Philippines. First off, what was the experience of like just going overseas? I know you've gone over twice to the Philippines and Japan for fights, but how is it different for you fighting over there as opposed to here in the United States?
It's way different. It's like two different worlds. Fighting overseas, of course, you get the culture shock, but the actual fighting part of everything is the same, you know, and the crowds are a little different. Here in America, they're a little crazier, a lot of yelling, a lot of things. And over there, it's a lot quieter. Japan was crazy. My coach, I could hear Pete Spratt talking to me, just like walking me through a situation. So I'm like, oh man, it was cool. It's cool to be there.
Throughout your entire MMA career, what is the craziest thing you have heard someone shout out from the crowd during one of your fights?
Oh, man, I blink out the crowd. I heard crazy crowd like kill him or something along those lines, or kick him in the nuts, things like that. You know how drunk people are. They just start talking out there. Out there, but I'm really putting things together. But other than that, you know, I really don't tune into the crowd.
It's one of the things that for me being on press row sometimes, like I just want to like tweet what fans are saying, because some of it, like you said, it is pretty hilarious of some of the stuff that you do here. But you mentioned about how, you know, your coach Pete Spratt, and everyone knows who Pete is. You know, is there some advice he has given you throughout the years that just really sticks with you day in and day out?
No, it's not his advice. It's his walk in life. The way he goes about doing things is what inspires me. So him being the age that he is, and he was still fighting, he's willing to get in there and fight again if the right money comes up or anything along those lines. But you know, he's a all around good guy, and as far as someone to look up when it comes to MMA, that's someone I look up to heavily.
The story of your career, I know age is just a number, but people will point to your age, but they'll also point to the fact of, along with being an MMA fighter, you're also a police officer. So how do you juggle, your daytime job as a police officer, but also getting the training in that you need?
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. You know, I wanted to do MMA, And that's the big thing. I love MMA. With that being said, it makes it easier to be able to get these things done and to do the daily grind. But it's a 24/7 thing. You know, I get up in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, to get prepared for work. I get to work. I'm here by 7:45, and we may have a full day ahead of us. And I don't get off till about 4:30. After 4:30, I usually get up and I leave here and I go. I have a kids class that I teach, a martial arts class that I teach, traditional martial arts in. And so I end up going from here directly over there, checking in, and I'm there for another hour. Then from there, either I might take the kids home or I may have something going on and I'm moving around. And then from there, I'm right back in the training. 2 hours, 2 or 3 more hours of training over at Pete Spratt's and Rodrigo Pinero, BJJ, doing that over there. And then on top of that, you know, you got cardio and things of those sorts. So it's either early in the morning or it's late at night. So it's a 24/7 thing.
In terms of being a police officer, do you ever run into somebody inside the department that maybe does not maybe know you, understand your MMA fighter, and all of a sudden they find out you're an MMA fighter? Do you get any weird conversations that come about because of that?
Oh, yeah. You always have somebody who thinks they know a little bit about mixed martial arts and want to have a conversation. So it's a good icebreaker, especially when you're dealing with different people and you're trying to talk to them. Other than that, you know, it most of the people, it being San Antonio, is a big city, but it's a city. A lot of people know you, so it is what it is.
But of course, the fight here for the LFA heavyweight title, you got Jared. He's 5-0 in his career. First off, assess Jared as an opponent and what gets you excited about this matchup besides the fact of it's for the heavyweight title.
Man, the heavyweight title is all I need. Heavyweight title is all I need to be motivated about this fight. As far as Jared could be anybody. It could be anybody. It don't matter who it was. Anybody outside of the UFC, I feel that I given day. So with that being said, I feel that Jared is bringing another exciting factor. Is he normal fight, most of the fights that I've searched and researched on, he's a stand-up guy. He's standing up and he's fighting and he's doing this and that. I feel that this is going to be a great fight for me as far as stand-up wise. He's going to be a stand-up fighter. He's not going to try and take me down. And everybody says that and everybody looks that way, but as soon as they get hit or they get touched, then we're right back to wrestling and things along those lines. So I'm ready for that too. I'm a ground guy. I have no problem with that on that end as well. So I feel that this is a great fight for me, great fight for Jared. Getting put on the scene. As far as everything else that's going on, I feel that this is great for both of us, and getting that title is going to be great, bringing it to San Antonio.
Do you ever think that throughout your fight history that your opponent have underestimated you in any aspect of the game? Maybe do you think that, you know, they think they can take you down? I mean, have you ever felt that, like, hey, this guy just underestimates my abilities?
Yeah, and I feed off of that. I like that. I'd rather you be surprised than you be totally on your game. With that being said, you know, it's been a lot of surprises because they look at the age and they think, oh, you know, this guy he's on his way out. I'm going to send him on his way out. It doesn't quite work that way. It doesn't quite work that way. So with that being said, I think, and then they think that I'm just a stand-up fighter. That's great, too, because then they come in there and they want to take down, and I have other tricks up my sleeve. So it makes it – I try to stay as relevant as I can, and that's what's helped me throughout this time as far as my age and the time that I spend in the game.
How much more years do you want to compete actively in MMA? I mean, have you even thought of that number yet?
No, not really. You know, a lot of people ask me that, and I'm like, it's crazy that I'm 42 and I'm still in the game, and I feel that I can still get in the UFC. I still that I can turn heads. I feel I still put on a show. I'm winning. I'm not going out there and losing to something terribly crazy. With that being said, as long as I'm competitive and as long as I'm not getting hurt, I hardly ever, and I thank God for that, I hardly ever get anything in the cage. I've never really gotten hurt. I think Jared Roshaw, which was years ago, cut me when he had a headbutt, cut me along the eye, and what else was? Oh, my ankle was broken in three places. The first round, I want to say that was what, the first minute or so of the first round of a three round fight. And that was happening to be here in San Antonio. With that being said, that was before Jared Roshaw got into the UFC. I want to say maybe the next thing was his call to UFC, and he went there and he did good things over there. So, I'm not the fighter that people look at and they say, oh yeah, that guy had, you know, because I'm always changing my game. I'm always coming up with new things and just increasing the weapons that I have in the game. Hard for people to beat.
Obviously, the immediate goal here is to win the LFA title. But is there any other goals you have set for yourself of what maybe you want to accomplish over the next, say, 12 months?
Things that I would like to accomplish, I would like to, again, the belt is right around the corner. I want that. I'm going to get that. Once I get that, I would like to defend it, close out of anybody who has a chance of even build. So I would say maybe a couple more fights this year as far as under LFA and getting that belt defended. This is the second year I've never did four fights in a year. For whatever reason, people fall out, people don't show, can't get fights, things along those lines. So I would like to get a fourth fight in a year type situation. That would be nice, and get a defense of the title would be good.
Of course, the fight, is
fight here.
Your fight for the heavyweight title coming here June 30th, LFA 15. Richard the Black Eagle Odoms. Of course, you want to follow him on social media. I saw your Facebook post that the question you're asked about married men, about whether you want to be a ride or happy. That was so true. any married man that sees that question you put out there, the answer is true.
That's a question you got to ask yourself, you're a married man. Before you get into that argument, do you want to be right? Or do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy? That's two choices that you have going into the game. Because you're always wrong. It doesn't matter. Even if you're right, you're going to be wrong. If you prove them wrong, oh my God, it'll be something that they'll be rubbing in your face and trying to make sure they're getting back at you on that end. So that's married life, man. I've been married for 22 years, so it's just for fun.
Yeah, I've been married for 9 years. Happy. I will definitely take happy over being right any day. Yes. But Richard... any married man knows that's the truth. Every married man knows that's the truth. But Richard, I really do appreciate time. Where can everyone follow you at on Twitter?
Twitter, I'm at Odoms313 on Twitter, and Black Eagle Odoms Black Eagle Odoms at Twitter, and you know I'm on Facebook, and I have that. That's about it. I want to say I got Instagram as well, but I want to say that one's Odoms 313. Other than that, man, you always follow, always stay tuned. Be looking for me out on June 30th in Oklahoma. I definitely plan to turn heads. I definitely plan to make believers out of non-believers and continue to I'm just getting warmed up, basically. I'm just getting warmed up, and this is just a coming out party for me.
Great conversation there with Richard Odoms. I appreciate Richard coming on the podcast, talking about his fight coming up on Friday night in the main event of LFA 15. It was kind of a good conversation there at the end, just talking about, do you want to be right or be happy with your wife? That was a good little fun conversation there I had with Richard. But also coming up on Friday night in Mexico City, it is Combates America. And Andres Quintana, we've had on the podcast in the past, is going to be in the co-main event of this fight card. And in my interview with him, I started off by asking him about fighting in Mexico City. Has he, talking about the preparations of fighting in Mexico City, and did he have to make any changes?
No, I mean, I've always trained in elevation, so I feel like I'm going to be very well prepared. I live in 5,500 feet of elevation, and then if I go to the top of the mountain, I'm about 11,000, I believe. Yeah, mm-hmm. About 11,000. And we go to the top of the mountain on a weekly basis in training camp anyway. So as you guys could see off of my last fight, I did very well. I trained in elevation as well, and I fought at sea level. So I feel like this isn't going to be much of a factor as it will be for my opponent.
And that was a decision went back in February. Overall, is it you extremely happy with what you're able to do in that fight, or do you go back and say, I could have done a little better here and there? I mean, because I know you're probably always your toughest critic.
Yeah, I was happy that I was able to pull out the win. He was a tough opponent, but yeah, obviously I'd like to get the finish and continue my streak of being a knockout artist. But some people are just tough, and it doesn't always come. So you be patient and you pick your shots.
Does there ever become a point in a fight where you just kind of have that mentality of like, it's unlikely I'm going to be able to put this guy away, and kind of the mindset changes a little bit?
No, never. I'm always looking for a shot to finish. I'm a finisher, and I pride myself in that. So if I'm ever able to hurt you, you keep your guard up.
I remember we were actually supposed to do an interview a little while ago. Your fight ended up getting canceled. So kind of how did that alter your training when you have a fight canceled? But I mean, you get this fight booked here pretty quickly. But how did that? Is it just one of those days for a day or two you're just kind of bummed when you learn your fight's been canceled?
Yeah, of course. It didn't even get canceled. My guy just punked out. He's scared, Young kid, 2-2 record, I believe. He didn't want to step up to the big leagues. And I don't blame him, but don't say you're going to take the fight whenever you don't have any intention to.
Did you have that fear in taking the fight against a guy who only had four fights that could happen?
No. I'm a warrior, and I go out there, and I'm going to give it my all every single time I step into that cage.
Being in the co-main event here, obviously it's a huge opportunity for you, and I've been kind of told that you kind of feel like this is kind of going to be a way to show that you can be the face of Combate Americas.
Yeah, of course. I feel like I beat their top prospect already, so I feel like I already am. I came in relatively unknown, especially to the Mexican community, and I made a big splash. And now I'm fighting in Mexico, and it's just a great opportunity to further my fan base, which I'm sure I will do.
Anyone who follows you on social media saw that you've been working a little bit with Claudia Gadelha, one of the top UFC women's strawweights. What have you taken from her in just how she prepares for fights and maybe incorporate into what you do?
I look at her and I look at me, and we train pretty similar, she's a top athlete and so am I. It just gave me reinforcement that I know I'm doing the right things.
And with this fight here against Salazar, 5-1 in his career, You know, when you think about him and what he brings to the table, what is there something that sticks out about him, or do you say there's a bunch of things that stick out?
He's going to be explosive. I know he may try and take me out in the first round, but who hasn't? So I just got to be prepared for that. He's shorter, which I feel like I do well with shorter guys. And I just feel like everyone says they're not going to shoot and they want to stand in front of me until it's time to stand in front of me.
Is there a reason why you feel that, you know, fighting a shorter fighter just works out really well for you? Is there a particular aspect of why it does?
Just my reach and my height advantage. I'm very well at staying on the outside and being able to pick people apart from there. I had a little bit tougher time against Eric because he had similar stats to me, you know. So I just feel like I just do a lot better being able to stay on the outside and them not being able to even reach me, as I'm very effective with my jab and my long-range shots.
Everyone knows you're not going to go on an interview and talk about your game plan and what you look to accomplish, but is your mindset for him, because obviously you're thinking about what his game plan may be for you and how you counter that, I mean, is your kind of thought is, and kind of what you just allude to there, is the fact of, hey, he's going to stand and strike for me for a very short time, and all of a sudden he's going to try to close that distance and try to get this fight to the ground?
It may not even be a short time. He may, you know, stick to that game plan for a while. I'm sure they're going to test the waters and they're going to see how they feel against me, but I just feel like I'm really good at what I do, and everyone plans to stand with me, but it just doesn't go that way. And just like Eric, I'm sure he planned to stand with me and trade, but he shot twice on me, you know. So everyone is going to shoot.
Have you allowed yourself to even think about what could be after this fight at all, or is it just, you know, one-track mind at this point?
I focus on what I have at hand, but, you know, I feel like I'm the top prospect there, and everyone should have their target on me, and I'm the one that they need to beat now. I feel like I'm the one that's a champion. I should have the belt already, so... Even though I only have one fight in, but just my record, my background, where I've come from, I feel like I'm the guy right now.
You know, I guess people saying you have that target on you, you could say that you're the hunted. Is it easier to be the hunted or the hunter in terms of working your way up the ladder?
It doesn't matter because whoever steps in the cage with me is the hunted.
And of course, this is a co-main event here of Combates Americas 15 on June the 30th in Mexico City. As after this fight's over, is the goal maybe to try to get two more fights in before this year's out, or is it maybe you're only thinking maybe it's one?
You read my mind. I'm trying to fight as much as possible.
Guys talk about, say, hey, I want to be the, you know, the Cowboy Cerrone seems to be the cliche we hear more times than not. Is that kind of, like, in a perfect world, would it be like once every 2 months? Is that kind of, would that be an ideal scenario for you?
That'd be nice. That'd be nice. I'd keep my pockets filled.
That is the big thing. It's all about getting that paycheck. Final thing, you know, because obviously it's a big topic in MMA, with Conor McGregor now getting this matchup against Floyd Mayweather as a MMA fighter. Do you give Conor any chance?
No. Floyd's a defensive genius, and he won't be getting hit by that left hand. That's the only thing.
Have you ever thought about taking a boxing fight?
I have boxed many times.
Is that something you want to get back into, though?
Not at this time and point in my career. I'm making too much money right now to go back at the bottom of the barrel mm-hmm. in boxing, which they don't make much. You know, maybe $800 a fight. So, yeah. And just the risk of injury might put me out for, you know, I might get suspended for like 3 months, and yeah. Now I can't make money in MMA.
But, of course, first up is this fight here on June the 30th. Andres, as always, I appreciate time, and let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
My Twitter's @TheBullet_MMA, and everything else, Instagram, Facebook, is AndresQuintana.MMA.
Andres, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Good luck on Friday night in the co-main event of Combates Americas. As I mentioned, that preliminary card will stream live and free on Fight TV. So download that Fight app to watch the preliminary card of Combat Days America. Now, coming up next Friday night in Kansas City is going to be Shamrock FC 291. And one of the men that's going to be on that fight card is Matt Murray. If you watched a recent victory show, Matt was on that fight card. However, he was unable to get the victory, losing a decision there against Dustin Kramer. And I start off my conversation with Matt talking about that fight. For anyone who has seen that fight, Matt lands a straight right that hurts Dustin Kramer, and Dustin Kramer immediately tries to get the fight to the ground. And I started off just by asking Matt about that, and is that something that he thought would happen?
Well, you know, I had seen that he was shorter than me, and I knew that most people that I fight that are shorter than me, once they get hit, they're ready to go to the ground. You got a stop sign. Once they get hit, they're ready to go to the ground. So, but I didn't think it'd be that quick. I thought he'd want to put on a little performance for the fans and get everybody screaming, you know, and trade a little bit before he implemented his jiu-jitsu game. But I had studied a lot of him, and I know that he went to HD, and I saw one of his fights against a guy named Matt Murphy, and I saw that guy hit him with a jab, hit him with a straight right, and drop him. So I just said, you know, I'm going to put him in the same situation that made him lose before. So I just kept replicating that.
Extremely close fight. Could have gone either way. I'm not just saying this because I'm on the line with you, but I thought that you won the fight. I thought you, you know, I think it probably, would you agree that you think it comes down to that second round?
I thought it did. I thought it came down to the second round. And really, I think it came down to when he was getting up. Like, I threw a knee at him and he fell down, and he looked like he was done. I hit him with the hammer fist, kind of clipped the back of his ear and the side of his head a little bit, but then I thought he was going to stand up, and so I went to fire that kick so I could catch him on the way up, caught him in the face, and the ref didn't take a point, but I felt like one of the judges were kind of swayed by that and decided, you know what, that was a little much for me, and they kind of took the point from that, and I feel that illegal kick did the job on taking that victory from me.
And I remember the camera angle on that. I mean, you saw it right in your face. You knew exactly what it was.
So
and it even before the decision was read, it looked like you kind of thought, like, this thing's not going to go my way. Is that an accurate assumption?
Exactly, because of that strike. I don't do that. I'm a clean fighter. You know, I respect people. I don't even throw the oblique kick. Just even though I know the oblique kick is good, I just don't throw it because I don't want to take a chance of ruining someone's career or their training time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that could be one of my downfalls, is having a big heart, but I love to compete. And I feel that if I can't beat you without maiming you for something that's going to hurt you after the fight, then, you know, I deserve to lose. But I mean, doing something, you know, that illegal kick really it made me feel that was going to sway things.
They always talk about the lessons you learn, you know, in every fight, and, you know, guys always talk about it. It's the fights you lose are the things you take the most out of. What is the biggest takeaway for you out of your last fight as in comparison to when you won your pro debut?
Wow. Well, my pro debut, the gentleman, I learned not to work mitts next to where your opponent is, because then they'll decide not to go stand up with you anymore. So... he immediately got kicked in the face and decided to go to the ground. That's my favorite thing. Like, everyone I fight, I kick in the face. If you look back at my fights, like, you know, I like kicking people in the face. So, the one thing I learned, though, is that from that first fight to now is when I do go to the ground, especially with someone like him that's a jits guy, he took me down and he had good top control, but he wasn't landing hard strikes that were doing any damage. So I didn't feel in danger. So I just, you know, I've been doing a lot of sport. I do a lot of sport jiu-jitsu. So I didn't feel the need to get up because I wasn't getting hurt. So I was complacent and just played the game and was waiting for him to make a mistake. Him being a jiu-jitsu guy, he was waiting for me to make a mistake, but he was in a dominant position. So now I know if I go to the ground, I'm bouncing right back up like a jackrabbit. You know what I mean? I'm going to pretend like the ground is hot lava and I'm 8 years old going across the living room. You know what I mean?
In terms of preparations, have you made it, and have you altered your training at all in preparations for this fight as opposed to your preparations previously?
Well, I'm doing a whole bunch more sprawls, and I'm working on standing up from side control, and I'm doing more wall walking. Also, this camp, I'm doing a little less sport jiu-jitsu. I love rolling with the gi on, so I'm doing a lot more no-gi. That's where I just got out of a no-gi class. So I'm trying to make sure I keep myself on point with the no-gi and not just, you know, I don't want to leave my hand. If I get to the guillotine point, I'm not going to just hang on to it when I'm on the ground. I'm just going to shrimp and get back to my feet. I'm just working on standing back up, you know, and throwing hands, you know. I mean, this guy's a boxer, so, I mean, it may be good for me to stay on the ground with him, but I know he's not a kickboxer. So I'm really looking forward to someone that's going to want to stand and bang and put on a good show for the crowd. You know, I'm an entertainer is what it comes down to, and a competitor and a contender at the same time. So, you know.
KnuckleJunkies.com is a great source for anything involved in that area, especially with Shamrock FC. And one of the things they wrote about your fight was, if this fight stays on the feet, this has a chance to be a fight of the night. Would you agree with that statement?
100%, because I've seen Raul fight. That guy got a chin of iron. I mean, and he loves to fight, you know. So I feel me and him standing on our feet, we're going to get that fight of the night. I don't know if they give a fight of the night bonus or anything like that. But, I mean, just hearing everybody excited about it and happy, you know, that's enough bonus for me.
It's something to mention about that, because your last fight was in Victory, and they do those finishing bonuses. And this has kind of come a little bit of talk in the MMA industry. When there's a finishing bonus, do you fight differently?
Me personally, I mean, some guys do. I do fight a little harder for that bonus, but I get a bonus from the crowd and the excitement, and just, you know, if you can get a man to submit to your will, it's a really great feeling. You know, I mean, the submission bonus does help line the pockets. I won't deny that. So, you know, sometimes you're gonna bang a little harder, but, you know, you get a win bonus too. So, I mean, if the win bonus equals a finish bonus, you know, you're in the same sense getting a finish bonus. If you follow me on that.
In terms of Raul here and your keys to victory, if you're just going to name one key to victory for you, what is it?
Range. As long as I keep my range, that's going to be my key to victory. If I let him get inside, like if you see when he fought Stephen Graham, he's going to hit you with that right hand. He's got that uppercut that's real sneaky. He likes to lead with it sometimes, and that'll put you on your butt. I watched it happen with him and Stephen Graham. But then I seen another fight about 5 months ago, 4 months ago, where a gentleman kept him at range, kept peppering him with the jab, front kicks, leg kicks, and side kicks, and kept that distance. But then I saw another guy that didn't keep the range. It went all the way. It went distance, but he kept the distance close. And that's where he's right at home, because he can score, you know, he can dirty box, and, you know, he can do what he does best, and he can brawl, you know.
And of course, this will be here in essentially the middle of 2017. After this fight's over, have you started to kind of outline what you want the rest of 2017 to be for you?
Yes, the rest of 2017, it's going to be my wife's turn. So, after this fight, I'm probably take like a few weeks break. And, you know, I usually take about a week to 2 weeks in between my training. But this time I'll probably take about 3 weeks and just completely focus on her, because she's got a big fight coming up with undefeated Jake Chung on KCFA. So I'm going to have to make sure she's ready for that. It's going to be her rematch. It was a close fight of the night last time. So I want to make sure she's ready for that. So I want to be focused on her for a few weeks. And then my game plan for the rest of the year is, I was thinking of another kickboxing match or something just to get my hands going. I mean, I'm going to be doing the Kansas State Games here at the Sport Zone on the 17th of July, something like that, right after my fight. So, you know, win or lose, I still got to keep my jiu-jitsu up, and I still got to do a kickboxing match to keep my hands going.
With fighting being a family business, how do you separate, you know, fighting in the business, but then coming home and just having a regular husband and wife relationship?
Regular. Oh, man, I feel you. Our relationship is far from regular. Say, when we get home, we watch fight videos, we watch tapes, we discuss what went on in practice. We game plan for the next practice. We completely immerse ourselves in the sport. we're obsessed with it. So, I mean, our life, our kids are in martial arts. We're in martial arts. My three-year-old, you know, he does Kenpo. My 10-year-old does Kenpo. You know, I mean, and we work as live-in home health aides. So when we're at home, it's right to work. So, you know, we got to get home. You know, we got to help get, you know, our elderly, the two people that we take care of. We got to get them in their beds, you know, or get them meals, get them cleaned up, things like that, get their pills ready. So, I mean, we go around the clock. So we, if we're not at the gym, we're at the house doing our job. And then if we're not at that, you know, so we pretty much work around the clock. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, sometimes we do take like vacations. Like, I think we're going to go camping possibly after my fight, just so she can have some time to reflect before, you know, mm-hmm. she'll be mid camp. And so we'll probably go out to the lake and, you know, sit around a fire or something and just relax and bring the kids, my brother and stuff like that, and just, you know, kind of forget and relax and then right back in the gym that next day. So,
but of course, pretty busy. You've got your fight coming up here July 7th, Shamrock FC 291. Matt, I really do appreciate time. Is there anywhere my listeners can follow you out on social media?
Yes, I have a couple places you can find me. You can look me up on Instagram under Matthew Murray or RavenPreacher45 at gmail.com. You can also look me up on YouTube. My channel is RavenPreacher45. And on there, you're going to find all kinds of great training things I do, funny family videos, so you can see the softer side that I have. There's a couple of my fights on there, too. You can look me up on Facebook at Matt the Action Figure. You know, I'd shout out to some of my sponsors, the local Laser Tag and VR Gaming. Also, Sky's the Limit, one of our great sponsors. Joe Shrimp, All Around Construction. Soma School of Martial Meditative Arts. Creaky's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Central Park Rec Center. That's just to name a few of them. We got a lot of people helping us out here in the community and keeping this machine going.
And I appreciate Matt Murray coming on the podcast, all about his fight coming up next Friday night, Shamrock FC 291. And before I get into what's going on, Fox, I just want to send my condolences to the family of Brian Levick. You may have heard Brian Levick's name before. Brian had done an MMA show in the past, Alchemist Radio, and most recently he had been a PR representative, worked with Titan FC, worked for Shamrock FC, Valor Fights. He actually, we set up that interview with Matt Murray. And I just want to send my condolences to Brian Levick's family. You know, most of my communication with Brian was via text message and email, but had a great relationship with them. You know, was always great in lining up fighters. So I want to send my condolences to Brian Levick. And if you're in the MMA community, if you want to help his family out, I know Lex McMahon has set up a GoFundMe account. I know if you go to Jeff Aronson's social media accounts, the link is up there. But I just want to say thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Brian Levick. And Brian, rest in peace. Now, I do want to talk about what happened on Tuesday with Fox Sports. And this was one of those stories I saw pop up on my social media timeline. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this at the end of the podcast was simply because if it was at the end of the podcast that you just didn't really care about this subject, you know, you close it out and you come back next week. But maybe you are wanting to get in the media, or maybe you know somebody that wants to get in the media. And this is what I'll say about what's happened. If you have not seen the story, Fox Sports got rid of all of their writers, and they are going all in on video. They have basically decided to make a business decision. And you know, look, it sucks to see, you know, people in media lose their jobs. I mean, it's something you never want to see, but it is a part of the game. You understand that happens in mixed martial arts, the fact of, you know, or in media in general. But this is the thing I would say about this. And look, and this is something that I did with the MMA Report for the most part about a year ago, where essentially 90% of the content, 80% of the content you see on the MMA Report is either video or podcast form. And so I understand what Fox is doing here. I think they're taking a big risk, by the way. But I think it's, if you are, you know somebody or you want to be in media, I would definitely take note of what Fox is doing here. Everything is about video. You know, Damon Martin, who of course has been covering MMA for a long time, he did lose his gig there at Fox. I am sure that someone is going to pick up Damon. He's an excellent journalist covering the sport. He works very hard. I've never had the chance to work with Damon, but everyone that has been around him and has raved about his work ethic. I think it's you're seeing how covering sports is evolving. Everything is about video. Everything is about podcasting. And something that I have done but very interesting to see. I know a lot of people are looking at Fox and saying, oh, this is a massive mistake, but who knows, maybe a year from now people are looking at Fox saying that was genius, and we'll see what happens there. But it always sucks to see someone lose their job, but I think this is another aspect of how media is evolving. And, I still think there is a place for written articles, but I just think the days of people, seeking out those 1,000, 2,000 word articles, I think are just done. They, we live in a society that we want it now, we want it quick, and video really is the way to go about it. But, it sucks to see a guy lose his job, but I'm going to be following what happens with Fox Sports, because that's going to be something very interesting to pay attention to as time goes on. But if you are trying to get in the media, or you know somebody that's getting in the media, they should definitely be following what is going on there with Fox Sports. And I will tell you, if you're a aspiring journalist, someone who's young, you want to know everything about video, and knowing how to edit, record it, everything. I can tell you this, for all the video stuff I do it all on my own. I record it, I edit it, I post it, I do every aspect of it. I by no way do I proclaim to be a guru when it comes to video editing. I know how to do the basic stuff, but that's definitely something that you need to have in if you're looking to go into media. It sucks what's happened there at Fox. A lot of great people, not just Damon Martin, a lot of great people lost their gigs. But, I think it's a little bit of a way how, sports reporting is evolving. But I do want to thank Rob Font, Greg Rebell, Richard Odoms, Andres Quintana, and Matt Murray, all coming on this episode of the podcast. The interviews I did with Font, Rebell, Odoms, and Quintana were all done by video. So those individual videos will be up on themareport.com. Also on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Please subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube. Always trying to get those subscriber numbers up. Tell your friends about it. Tell your friends about this podcast. And if there's anything you guys want to hear on this podcast, maybe there's a fighter you want to hear or something you want me to talk about, be sure, just hit me up. The best way is on social media, on Twitter, at Jason_Floyd. You can also send me a message via the MMA Report YouTube channel, the MMA Report Facebook channel. That is really the best way to let me know who you want to hear or what you want to hear me talk about on this podcast. I will tell you, I am planning a special episode of the MMA Insiders podcast that I'm hoping they'll be up in the next week or two. Has not been done yet. Working on the final details of this. But working on having a conversation with a MMA referee to talk about some of the things that have gone on, obviously with the unified rules and how it's different state to state. And a lot of interesting topics. I've never really had the opportunity to sit down and have an hour-long conversation, 30-minute conversation with a referee. I've had a chance to, maybe talk to him here and there for 5 or 10 minutes, but I'm finalizing the details on that. That'll be a part of the MMA Insiders. Of course, myself and Sam Kaplan did do a episode of the MMA Insiders podcast last week, so be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to check out all the great programs we have over at RadioInfluence.com. I mentioned that on Monday, we did debut a new pro wrestling show. It is called Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. His first guest was the former WWE ring announcer Justin Edwards. Also, the guys over there inside the dugout, Kevin Kennedy, the former skipper, and Rich Herrera, who now works for the San Diego Padres radio network. They had a new episode of their podcast, so be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to check out Duffify Live with Chef Brian Duffy. Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear. Ian's last episode that I was on, as we talked a little Mayweather-McGregor. Of course, that's obviously going to be a hot topic as the weeks go on. Also, be sure to check out the Valor Hour. Valor Fights, a regional Tennessee promotion. They've got a fight card coming on Friday night. This week's episode of the Valor Hour will be Tim and Casey previewing the fight card on Friday, fight night at the Shed. Of course, I mentioned a little earlier in the podcast, I did do an interview with Jake Clemens. That video is already up on the MMAReport.com, so you can check out that. Also, this week I'll be posting an audio interview I did with Logan Neal, who is a part of that fight card. So really do appreciate you every week listening to this podcast. And if there's anything you want to hear on this podcast, be sure to hit me up on social media at Jason_Floyd. Of course, be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. And all you got to do is search the MMA Report.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
Dennis Rodman is kind of a weird character to where I don't really get him. If you saw, they had like a documentary on HBO or Showtime, one of those stations, and you know, he would head over to North Korea and he would bring in like different basketball players, and he's a drunken mess. And I don't think it's just alcohol. I just think you just put whatever's in the system, it doesn't matter. But it was really kind of sad because half the times he was so hammered, he couldn't play basketball, or you couldn't understand what he was saying, or he couldn't, you know, relay his message out there. But I guess Dennis Rodman headed over to North Korea, and ironically, it was right about the time where North Korea released that Autumn War Burger or War Beer, and it had nothing to do with it. Because, you know, the news will come out and say, Dennis Rodman had this guy released. It had nothing to do with it. He had no role in it. And this Otto Warm Beer, his name is, 15 years he spent in jail for basically tearing down a banner, tearing down a political banner, okay? He was confined for 17 months, and when he came back and they gave him up, he was in a coma. So I don't think people just slip into comas just for the hell of it. Usually it's got to be some kind of trauma. I don't know how that all came around. And they let him go for humanitarian reasons. You're going to detain somebody for 15 years for tearing down a banner and then let them go for humanitarian reasons? Isn't that the pot calling it black? Seriously, humanitarian reasons in North Korea. And what's amazing is, you know, North Korea, you don't hear anybody saying they're going to North Korea. And the U.S. State Department came out and said they strongly suggest not visiting North Korea. Yeah, nobody is going over there. I've never heard anybody say, I'm going on vacation to North Korea. I've never seen that.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.